light out in the parking lot tonight. That looks nice. Maybe you didn't notice it, but if you didn't, you better get the eye doctor. But yeah, that's nice. And second, we like to turn to 2 Samuel, chapter 23. I like to read verses 13 through verse 17. 2 Samuel, chapter 23, verses 13 through verse 17. And three of the 30 chief went down and came to David in harvest time under the cave of Adullam. And the troop of the Philistines pitched in the valley of Rephaim. And David was then in a hold, and the garrison of the Philistines was then in Bethlehem. And David longed and said, "Oh, that one would give me drink of the water of the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate." And the three mighty men brake through the host of the Philistines and drew water out of the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate, and took it, and brought it to David. Nevertheless, he would not drink thereof, but poured it out unto the Lord. And he said, "Be it far from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Is not this the blood of the men that went in jeopardy of their lives?" Therefore he would not drink it. These things did these three mighty men. In the time of our text, what we just read here, David, of course, had fallen out of favor with Saul, the king. The background of this, if we go back to 1 Samuel chapter 18, 1 Samuel chapter 18, in reading with verse 5, David went out whithersoever Saul sent him, and behaved himself wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. And when they came, and it came to pass as they came, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing, to meet King Saul with tabrets, with joy, and with instruments of music. And the women answered one another as they played, and said, "Saul hath slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s." And Saul was very wroth, and the saying displeased him. He said, "They have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more than but the kingdom?" Notice how his mind jumped. And Saul eyed David from that day and forward. Verse 11, and Saul cast the javelin, for he said, "I will smite David even to the wall with it." And David avoided out of his presence twice. And Saul was afraid of David, because the Lord was with him, and was departed from Saul. In verse 15, wherefore when Saul saw that he behaved himself very wisely, he was afraid of him. Verse 29, and Saul was yet the more afraid of David, and Saul became David's enemy continually. Chapter 19 and verse 2, Jonathan told David, "Saul, my father, seeketh to kill thee." In verse 10 and verse 11, and Saul sought to smite David, even to the wall with the javelin, but he slipped away out of Saul's presence, and he smote the javelin into the wall, and David fled and escaped that night. Saul also sent messengers unto David's house to watch him and to slay him in the morning. In verse 15, and Saul sent the messengers again to see David, saying, "Bring him up to me in the bed, that I may slay him." And on you can go, but you get the idea that Saul became David's enemy. Saul hated David, and in hatred he pursued David. He was concentrating all of his powers in hunting down David, in killing David. So what did David do? He fled for his life. And the actual happening of what we read in 2 Samuel 22 or 23, what we read there in our text, that actually happened in 1 Samuel chapter 22. In 2 Samuel 23, it's just a recounting of history. David was in his latter years, his last days, and he was recounting history. But what the event actually took place in 1 Samuel 22, and notice in 1 Samuel 22, verses 1 and 2, again, David has fled from Saul. David therefore departed thence and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And that's where we find David in 2 Samuel 23. And when his brethren and all his father's house heard it, they went down thither to him. And everyone that was in distress, and everyone that was in debt, and everyone that was discontented, gathered themselves unto him, and he became a captain over them. And there were with him about 400 men. Now we only read of three of those men in 2 Samuel chapter 23. So David had fled to this cave in Adullam. He's there hiding. He's threatened. He is being pursued by King Saul. He is emotionally drained. He is overwhelmed. At this particular time in his life was really quite dark. It was a time of loneliness. It was a time of great despair. The promise that he would one day be king, of course, as of yet is unfulfilled, and at this time he looked anything but like a would-be king. But it was from this cave in Adullam that David wrote the 57th Psalm and also the 142nd Psalm, and we'll go to those Psalms a little later. But if you read those Psalms in your own time, Psalm 57, Psalm 142, you get an idea of what David was experiencing in the cave of Adullam. But we want to look at the verses that we read for our text. I want to notice a few things here and just gather some lessons from these verses. I want to speak tonight on spiritual lessons from a cave in Adullam. We see, first of all, there are some things to learn. Though we do not read directly about Saul in these verses, there are some things to learn from Saul and the Philistines that should serve as a warning to you and I that are saved. Our text states in verse 13, that David was in the cave of Adullam, and the troop of the Philistines pitched in the valley of Rephaim. Now, at this time, of course, Saul was the king. It was Saul who was invested with power to protect, and that is a responsibility of government, to protect the nation. And it was his responsibility to protect the nation from their enemies. But Saul had a major problem. He misidentified his real enemy. Saul saw David as public enemy number one. David was not the enemy. David was not public enemy number one. The Philistines were the enemy. But Saul got his eyes off of the Philistines and became engrossed became obsessed with killing David. Killing David absolutely consumed Saul. He was obsessed with it. In 1 Samuel 23 and verse 23, Saul said, "I will search him out throughout all the thousands of Judah." What about the Philistines, Saul? Don't worry about the Philistines. I want David. In 1 Samuel chapter 24 and verse 2, as soon as Saul heard that David was in Engedi, we read that he took 3,000 chosen men of all Israel. 3,000 of his best men, and went to seek David. What about the Philistines? He wasn't concerned about the Philistines. He was concerned about David. And without a doubt, there were more things that demanded Saul's attention. David would be way down. David shouldn't have even been on the list. Killing David became the most important thing to Saul. He had many crucial matters that no doubt demanded his attention. But he had David. He had David on his mind. The people were depending upon Saul. The nation was depending upon Saul to protect them from their enemies. And he is obsessed with David. Saul was a man who had many decisions to make. He was a man who had many issues to face. But in Saul's mind, David was the biggest. My point is that Saul became very distracted from the real enemy. He came distracted from the real enemy. And notice in verse 14, the result of the distraction. The Philistines took advantage of the situation. We read in verse 13 that they pitched in the valley of Rephaim. That's bad enough. But it gets worse. Because we read in verse 14 that they set up fort on Israelite soil. The enemy, because of the distraction of Saul, set up a fort on Israel's soil. Verse 14 says, "And the garrison of the Philistines was then in Bethlehem." The garrison, the fort. They actually had a fort in Bethlehem. Why? Why did this happen? Because Saul was distracted. David became public enemy number one. And I believe tonight that when an individual or when a church collectively misplaces their energy and gets their priorities in the wrong order, the enemy is going to set up some forts. And it's sad tonight, but it's true. The enemy has set up forts in the very midst of Baptist churches tonight. The enemy has set up forts. Because God's people have become distracted. Because God's people have misidentified the enemy. So the Philistines had a garrison in Bethlehem, the very birthplace of David. Not only the very birthplace of David, but the would-be birthplace of Jesus Christ. And the Philistines have a garrison right there in Bethlehem. Oh, we need to realize tonight that Satan is the greatest opportunist in all the world. He's going to take every opportunity that you give him. And simply by the fact that Saul was distracted, that gave the enemy, the Philistines, opportunity to advance into Israel. And the same thing is happening today. We had better be on guard against being distracted, because if we become distracted, the enemy is going to make inroads right in Home Baptist Church. And they will set up garrisons right in the church. You won't have to deal with them outside the walls. They'll be right here. All it takes is to get distracted. And this is a lesson that we learn from Saul. And this is why we read in Ephesians 4 and verse 27, neither give place to the devil. You don't give place to the devil. You don't give place to the enemies of God. You just do not give them the opportunity. You do not do it. Well, we want to have him preach because he's a little off on some things, but we want to encourage him. You better be careful who you encourage. So we learn from Saul. We learn a valuable lesson that the Philistines built a fort in their own land. But then we learn some lessons from these three mighty men of David. And I believe there's an obvious correlation between David and his mighty men and Jesus Christ and his people. But these men are identified in the earlier verses, beginning with verse 8 through verse 12. And without going into their history, that's another message there in verses 8 through 12. But these three men are Adino, Eleazar, and Shammah. Those are the three men that we now read about, beginning here in verse 13. And three, now remember from 1 Samuel 22, that there's really over 400 men that have come to the cave. David, in his last words here in 2 Samuel 23, recounting history, mentions 33 men. But three of those 33 he mentions in particular. Again, Adino, Eleazar, and Shammah. But these men were willing to do something very, very daring, just simply to fulfill the desire of David. David, under great pressure, under great duress, began to have a desire for a drink of water from the wells in Bethlehem, his hometown. Verse 15. And David longed and said, "Oh, that one would give me drink of the water of the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate." Now, I believe that was uttered more as a sigh than as a request. I don't believe David was necessarily making a request here. He was just expressing a longing, an expression of grief that Bethlehem was now in the hands of the enemy. But these men, these three men in particular, heard the desire and longing of David. And they knew that if they could get water from the well of Bethlehem, that it would please David. They knew that. They knew that simply from David expressing his desire. They knew that water from Bethlehem would please David. That's all they had to know. All they had to know was that there was something that would bring pleasure to David. There was something that would please him, so they are determined to do it. If it pleases David, we're going to do it. That was their attitude. Whatever it costs, it doesn't matter. All we need to know is that it pleases David. There's water in other places. Certainly that would have been a lot easier to get to than Bethlehem. But David desired water from Bethlehem. That would please David. And these men had one desire. And that was to please David. Oh, what we can learn from these three men. Now, the cave of Adullam was about 17 miles southwest of Jerusalem, about 10 miles southeast of Gath. So these men would have to travel about 12 miles north through some very dangerous stretches of land in order to get to the wells of Bethlehem. Add to that challenge, you have the heavy infestation because of Saul's distraction. You have the heavy infestation of Philistines. This is no small task for three men to go 12 miles north dealing with the enemies to get what? That which would please David. You say, oh, they're just going after water. No, it's more than that. It's what would please David. All they had to hear was the desire of David's heart. And they wanted to fulfill it. So these three men determined, we're going to go and we're going to get that water for our king David. No matter what danger they had to face, no matter what paths they had to take, no matter how long it took them, and no matter what it cost them, they were intent on fulfilling the king's desires. That's all they wanted to do. All they had to know was that this water would please the king. And that's all they had to know. And that should be so with you and I. All we have to know is that such and such will please our Lord. And that should be enough. We shouldn't need a command. We shouldn't even need a promise. All we should need is such and such will please God. And knowing that, I have every intent of pleasing the Lord. That should be our heart's desire. And that was the desire of these three men. So they were willing to do whatever was necessary to please David. They were willing to risk their life. They were willing to risk their health for David. The Bible tells us that God can be pleased by us. And if God can be pleased by us, and He can, therefore it should be our aim in everything we do to please God. That should be our aim in everything. God can be pleased by us. We ought to seek to please Him. Since it is possible for you and I to please God, that ought to become our object in life. Again, all these three men had to hear was David say, oh, that I could have a drink from the wells of Bethlehem. They heard that that would bring pleasure to David. That's all they needed. They didn't need David to command them to go the 12 miles and get the water and bring it back to him. They didn't need a command. All they needed was, this will please David. And they're off. We need that spirit. I believe it was a joy for these men to do what they did. I believe they took delight in it. Because they knew, this is going to bring pleasure to David. And there wasn't anything that was going to stop them. They were going to get the water. They were not only going to get the water, they're going to bring it back to David. Because this is going to please David. And we want to please David. Today, most of God's people are bent on pleasing someone else. But all we should hear is that such and such will please God. And that should be enough. That should be enough for you and I. The very fact that God can be pleased ought to immediately fill us with a sense of obligation. And I believe as soon as these men heard David speak there in verse 15, "Oh, that one would give me to drink of the water of the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate," that these three men immediately felt an obligation to David. 400 men in the cave. Three felt an obligation. Maybe the others felt the obligation. Three, maybe we should say, acted upon that obligation. Three men out of 400. There's a lesson there also. There aren't many who are going to act simply because it pleases God. I mean, what's in it for these three men? Nothing. We're just talking about some water. There's nothing in it for them. They just wanted to please. They just wanted to please David. In other words, when David expressed his desire for water from Bethlehem, that was not trivial to these three men. That this would please the king, that this would please the king, their king David. It wasn't trivial to them. And if something pleases God, that's not a trivial matter. That's not a trivial matter. And if God can be pleased, and he can, then he can also be displeased. And these men just wanted to bring pleasure to David. It also speaks of something of their love for David. In verse 16 we read, "And the three mighty men," just hearing what David said in verse 15, "break through the host of the Philistines and drew water out of the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate. They took it and they brought it to David." And we read in verse 17, what they did was in jeopardy of their lives. David recognized this after they brought him the water in verse 17. He said, "Be it far from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Is not this the blood of the men that went in jeopardy of their lives?" They were willing to jeopardize their life. Why? To please David. To please David. And you and I ought to be willing to jeopardize our lives to please God. We don't need a command. All we need to know is that this is going to bring pleasure to God. And everybody in home church ought to be willing to jeopardize their life to do whatever it is that's going to bring pleasure to our King. So, that they would jeopardize their life tells me that they thought very highly of David. Tells me that they had a great love for David. They were willing with life or death. And we've got too many people today who will tell you they're ready to die for the Lord. The only problem is they're not willing to live for Him. We need to live for Him. And if it means that we have to die for Him, so be it. But we first have to live for Him. And these men were willing to live or die. Whatever it took. All because they wanted to bring pleasure to David. I believe that was their motivation. David wants this water. This water will please David. And that's enough motivation for me as far as these three men were concerned. That should be enough motivation for you and I. If it pleases God, that should be enough motivation for you and I to do it. If it displeases God, that should be enough motivation for us not to do it. It's very simple. So these three men, that's all the motivation they needed to act. And they were willing to pass through danger with no regard or with little regard of their own safety. In other words, their desire to please David was bigger than any other desire that they had. Did these men have families? I don't know. We don't know much about them. But perhaps they had families. Perhaps they had small children at home. Perhaps they had wives at home. But they were willing to risk everything just because they knew this is going to please David. That was enough. We need to learn from these men. These men had the heart of a servant. I believe as they heard David's longing and they went that 12 miles, breaking through the host of the Philistines, doing whatever they had to do to get to Bethlehem, I don't believe that they thought that they were being put out. I don't believe that thought ever crossed their mind. Their only thought was, this is going to please David. These men weren't just doing minimal service. We live in a day of minimal service. You could go to any store. I could get off on that. But we live in a day of minimal service. Well, that's not my job. Well, I need to stop. Many would think that they were doing too much. This thought never crossed these men's mind as they went that 12 miles. Minimal service is doing the bare minimum. According to Romans 12, verses 1 and 2, the bare minimum is to present yourself a living sacrifice unto God. Most aren't even doing the bare minimum. They're not even doing the bare minimum. And they think they're doing something. I mean, there are people, I guarantee it, who were here this morning, who aren't here tonight, who thought, man, I really did something today. They haven't done anything. Here, these men went 12 miles, risked their lives. And I don't believe that they thought they did anything that great. They just wanted to please David. But notice, perhaps, I don't know, perhaps the other men didn't even hear David's longing. But these three men hung on every word of David. When David spoke, they listened. And I believe David was just speaking to himself here, wishing for something. But these men hung on every word. And that's what we ought to do. We ought to hang on every word of our Lord, looking for opportunities to please Him. And that seemed to be the attitude of these men. So we learn a lesson from Saul and the Philistines. We learn a lesson from these three mighty men. But then lastly, and briefly, we learn a lesson from David. We learn something about, again, David in the cave of Adullam. That is a place of trial. And we learn some things from David's trial. Notice in Psalm 57. Psalm 57. Again, this psalm, according to the headings in our Bibles, was written of David when he fled from Saul in the cave. His condition was, in verse 4, "My soul is among lions, and I lie even among them that are set on fire, even the sons of men, whose teeth are spears and arrows, and their tongue a sharp sword." But notice David's faith. And this is a lesson to you and I. In verse 2, he prays for mercy. And he says, or in verse 1, and he says, "For my soul trusteth in thee, yea, in the shadow of thy wings will I make my refuge until these calamities be overpassed." We learn how to deal with our cave experiences. Trust in the shadow of his wings and realize that as a child of God, all calamities will overpass one day. They're all going to pass. David believed that. In verse 2, he said, "I will cry unto God Most High, unto God that performeth all things for me. He shall send from heaven and save me from the reproach of him that would swallow me up, Selah. God shall send forth his mercy and his truth." In verse 6, talking again about his situation, it says, "They have prepared a net for my steps. My soul is bowed down. They have digged a pit before me under the midst whereof they are fallen themselves." And then notice verse 7, "My heart is fixed. My heart is fixed, O God. My heart is fixed. I will sing and give praise." We learn something from David's attitude in the cave. But then notice in Psalm 142, that's the other psalm that was written during this time. In verse 3, we see something about his condition. He says, "My spirit was overwhelmed within me." Verse 4, he says, "I looked on my right hand, and behold, but there was no man that would know me. Refuge failed me. No man cared for my soul." This perhaps was before the 400 men got to the cave. "I cried unto thee, O Lord. I said, Thou art my refuge and my portion in the land of the living. Attend to my cry, for I am brought very low. Deliver me from my persecutors, for they are stronger than I. Bring my soul out of prison, that I may praise thy name. The righteous shall compass me about, for thou shalt deal bountifully with me." We see David expressing his distress. We see David expressing his faith. We see David crying unto God. And again, that's the lesson that we learn when we're in the cave. And we all have to spend some time in the cave. We need to trust God. And we need to cry out unto God. And we need to place our faith in God. But then there's also a valuable lesson. The men bring the water to David in verse 16 of our text. And we read, "Nevertheless, he would not drink thereof, but poured it out unto the Lord." I've heard people preach, imagine what Adino, Eleazar, and Shammah must have thought. Gone through all that they went through. They bring the water to David. And what does David do? pours it out. What do you think they thought? I've heard people say, well, they had to be terribly disappointed. I don't think so. Because why did they go on this journey? To please David. And I believe David was very pleased when they brought him that water. And I believe David was showing his pleasure by pouring it out unto the Lord. But three men risked their lives to get water to David from the well of Bethlehem. And we read that David would not drink it. And the reason David would not drink it is because he thought it would be selfish. That's made obvious from verse 17. Be it far from me, O Lord, that I should do this, that is, drink this water. These men have jeopardized their lives. So what did David do? Well, you'll notice it doesn't say that he dumped the water out. That's not what it says. Now, I believe there's a difference between dumping and pouring myself. I'm not going to get into that. But it says he poured it out. Now, when I dump something out, I'm not giving it much thought. When I pour it out, I'm giving some more thought to it, and there's a purpose. He poured it out. But he didn't just pour it out. It says he poured it out unto the Lord. He poured it out unto the Lord. You know, the Old Testament, I believe there's five scriptures in the Old Testament that teach us about drink offerings that were poured out unto God. And we don't have the time to go into those, but the drink offerings, when they poured the drink offering out, whatever they were pouring out, it was usually wine at that, in those situations, was holy. They were recognizing it as holy. And they were consecrating it to God. They were offering it in service to the Lord. And whatever you and I receive tonight, whatever we receive in our lifetime from the Lord, we ought to be willing to pour it out unto Him. Pour it all out unto Him. David didn't take it for himself. And whatever God has blessed us with, we need to have the attitude, God is worthy. Whatever gifts God has given us, we're not worthy of those gifts. God is worthy, so pour it out. Pour it out unto the Lord. And that's what David did. And I believe it thrilled the hearts of these three men. Because David, what greater gratitude than to pour something unto the Lord? David was showing great gratitude. And he poured it unto God. In closing, turn to the book of Ezekiel, chapter 16. Book of Ezekiel, chapter 16. The book of Ezekiel, this chapter, God has given a message on how He found Israel, how He delivered Israel, compared them to an infant in the wilderness. Goes through all the blessings that God had given to her. And in verse 11 he said, I deck thee also with ornaments. I put bracelets upon thy hands and a chain on thy neck. I put a jewel on thy forehead and earrings in thine ears and a beautiful crown upon thine head. Thou wast decked with gold and silver, and thy raiment was of fine linen and silk embroidered work. Thou didst eat fine flour and honey and oil, and thou wast exceeding beautiful, and thou didst prosper into a kingdom. He's saying, I've blessed you with all of these things. Now, what are we to do with those blessings? We're to give them back to God. But notice what they did. Verse 16, and of thy garments that God gave them, of thy garments thou didst take and deckest the high places with divers colors, played the harlot thereupon. The like thing shall not come, neither shall it be so. Thou hast also taken thy fair jewels, the jewels that God gave them, of my gold and of my silver, which I have given thee, and makest to thyself images of men, and didst commit whoredom with them, and tookest thy broidered garments, the garments that God gave them, and coverest them, that is their gods, and thou hast set mine oil and mine incense before them, that is the gods of Baal. My meat also, which I gave thee, fine flour and oil and honey, wherewith I fed thee, thou hast even set it before them, again the false gods, for a sweet savor. And this it was, and thus it was, saith the Lord God. You say, how awful, how ungrateful. But that's happening everywhere today. That's happening everywhere. God blesses us. He blesses us materially. He blesses us spiritually. He blesses us with abilities. He blesses us with talents. What do? We take it and we give it to the world. Take the very things that God has given us, and we misuse them in the world. What we need to do is pour it out on the Lord. Whatever it is that God has given you, pour it out on the God. Consecrate it unto Him. Set it apart for Him. Realize He is worthy. He is worthy. Oh, what a lesson we learn from David. So there are some valuable lessons in this chapter. There are many more. But these are just some of the valuable lessons. Secondly, that we would become like David's three mighty men, that we hang on every word of the Lord, looking for an opportunity to please Him. I ought to get up every morning looking for an opportunity to please the one who saved my soul. That ought to be what I live for. To please God. But so many today, they only want to please themselves. And if God happens to be pleased in their journey and their pursuit of pleasing themselves, then that's okay. But it should be simply about pleasing the Lord. And then that we would learn from David, whatever God has given us, that we would just pour it out into the Lord. Consecrate it to His service. Set it.